Patricia.
Hey, Anne-Sophie. Så er vi i gang med Sans for Dans igen. Og hvis jeg lyder som en en stor rørende tusse,
så er det, fordi du bare har røget, siden vi har optaget det, sidste afsnit.
Ja, fordi jeg er blevet stor. Så er det, fordi jeg ligesom resten af Danmark har haft lungebetændelse. Og det var ganske forfærdeligt. Og min stemme halter altså noget bagefter. Så det er derfor, jeg lyder sådan lidt rusten i det.
Ja. Og ens lunge er jo også en del af kroppen.
Det er det i hvert fald.
Hørte du lige mig lave en segue der til vores emne?
Det var så godt. Det her synes jo nærmest, at min lunge har ligget uden for kroppen. Men jo, den er en del af kroppen, ja. Som jo er vores tema her. Anden sæson af Sans for Dans, det er vores tema, kroppen.
Og det kan man jo tale om på rigtig mange måder.
Det kan man.
Nu skal vi tale med Adam Linder, som er koreograf, som du er op i studiet med lige nu, Patricia.
Jeg er op med Adam op i studiet, hvor vi arbejder på hans forestilling, som er kurateret af os, Dansk Danseteater, og vores kunstneriske leder, Marina Mascaré. Hun har kurateret Adam Linder til at lave en forestilling, som hedder Drip Tekne.
Og hvem er Adam Linder?
Jamen, Adam er en australsk koreograf. Han har haft base i Berlin, Paris, i mange år. Han arbejder jo i det her krydsfelt mellem dans, performance, scenografi, fashion, musik. Altså, han har en ret fantastisk æstetik, som jeg faktisk ikke har set, at nogen andre har. Så det er jo ret flot.
Jeg glæder mig også så meget.
Altså, ja, han er helt sin egen kunstner, og skidesød og sjov og meget veltalende og rigtig god til at facilitere prøverne op i studiet med danserne.
Og så har vi en gæst mere, som er Charlotte Sprogø, som er kurator på KYS, Museum for Kunst i det offentlige rum. Og det har vi jo, fordi at hun kender Adams værker, fordi at han jo, udover at han har lavet værker på teater, som de fleste koreografer, har han også lavet ting for MoMA i New York og Madame i Luxembourg og forskellige museer.
Ja, store museer. Ja, store museer.
Altså, det var gruppet i Berlin.
Ja, altså alle mulige fantastiske steder har han også spillet. Altså Sadler's Welsh, Sydney Dance Company, Ballet de Lorraine har han. Altså det er en imponerende liste, han har over af værker og kreationer.
Ja. Og Charlotte, hun har en PhD i eksperimentel kuratering og arbejder med koreograferede udstillinger. Og det er jo også derfor, hun kender Adams værk. Så derfor synes vi, det var spændende at snakke med hende. Så hun arbejder noget med samtidskunst om udstillinger, som er levende helheder. Mm. Hun har også lige været på Kunsthal Charlottenborg og arbejdet med en koreograferet udstilling. Mm. Så det bliver vi lidt klogere på, hvad det vil sige, og hvad kroppen kan i museumskontekst.
Det gør vi nemlig. Skal vi gå i gang?
Lad os gøre det.
So, we always ask our guest in this podcast a question that is like for you both, Charlotte and Adam, is what do you look for when you see choreography? Adam.
Creativity.
Yeah.
Imagination and craft.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the things that for me pull a choreographic work forward and kind of make a particular work distinctive. Also, when I feel that a choreographic work is really coming from a very kind of unique creative place, then I feel that it's not in some kind of trend. Mm. Or in some kind of genealogy of the form that I know, but is really kind of sticking out as a singular proposition.
And even though you don't like the choreographic work that you see, you still appreciate all those things that you said there, even though it's not your taste. You go in and kind of like analyze the work and say like, okay, I like this and this and this, and I appreciate that, but I didn't like the work in its whole.
Yeah, yeah, it can be. I feel like often when I'm struck by a work or a choreographer in particular who I think is very imaginative, I often do like the work, but I can appreciate, I can really appreciate a work that maybe stylistically or aesthetically, it doesn't speak to me so much, but I can see how well it's crafted. I can see, I can see the kind of the thought, the meticulousness, and the knowledge, the knowledge of dance, the knowledge of choreography, of embodiment that goes into crafting something.
Yes. Charlotte, what about you? What do you look for?
I think I look for some different aspects because I'm more interested in the force fields and energies and intensities. And that's also why I find your work so interesting, Adam. Because if you have this kind of feeling of life force of something that's like hitting you when you meet in. So as a curator, when I'm curating an exhibition, I'm always looking to how do I get this kind of life force or this energy field into the show. And when I see a choreographic piece that has some kind of tension, some kind of pulse, some kind of attitude, I'm really impressed and I'm thinking like, wow, how do I hold on to this? And also I'm very interested in tensions and all kinds of artworks that create a tension where you have this feeling of some kind of pressure and some kind of feeling at the same time. So this, all these different elements of something conceptual, feelings, tensions, force, energy, rhythms. And I don't know so much about the technical aspects because I don't come from the dance world, but I can appreciate when a piece is really precise. And so I'm interested in when feelings become form, like in the sort of when energy finds a really precise format that kind of hits you really hard. So I kind of like when it things are to the point and when they're, you really feel them.
Yeah. I really like your image of the energy field. You're right. It's like that's what you, when you are drawn to a piece, like when you can feel something from stage that then goes into your own body as an audience. Mm.
And also one other thing is I'm interested in contemporaneity in also in all kind of art forms. So this feeling that elements from our contemporary world or the human condition where they kind of come into the choreography. So you have this, it becomes an image of our present time. And I also think that's what you're working with so much. You're kind of embodying technologies and pressures and tensions into a choreography. And that's really impressive when you meet that in a dance situation anywhere.
Thank you. Nice.
Yeah. And Adam, you're obviously a dancer and a choreographer. And you've done quite a few works on museums and really taken that into your practice. And also in that sense, for me, it's pushed boundaries to what a choreographed piece is. Now, I'm wondering, how did you start doing that? Were you interested in that or were you asked to do something at museums?
I guess there were a few aspects of my kind of history that put me in that position. I was always interested in multiple art forms, from theater, visual arts, fashion, music. So I was, even as a teenager, I was always looking at all of these different domains. And then when I danced with Michael Clarke in my early 20s, he had a very particular context of visual artists around him. So we were really working in his world, surrounded by some pretty amazing artists like Kerith Wynne Evans and Sarah Lucas. And then I moved to Berlin and I also found myself in a milieu of visual artists. And when I started to create my own work, it was simultaneous with being invited by, at the time it was a gallery called Silberkuppe, to show my work in that context. So as I started to make work for the stage, I was also making work for the exhibition space. And I think that it, you know, this is coming on 12 years ago, I would say. And there was a very particular peak at that moment of performance practices being reintegrated into a kind of a history and a discourse of visual arts. So the start of my career kind of coincided with that. Mm. And that's why there was just a very kind of natural simultaneity because of the time that it was happening and because of the social context that I was in.
And you did these pieces that you called choreographic services, a series of pieces. What were they about? Or how did you approach to working with that? What's the theme of them?
I guess the first impulse was to bring my work as a choreographer, bring performance work into the visual arts context, the exhibition space, as a choreographer. So I was kind of playing with this idea that I'm not a local in that context. I'm a foreigner in that context, and therefore I would offer a very particular service. On top of that, I was very much so thinking, how can a choreographic work that doesn't have the same nature as an object or a painting, or, you know, how can there be a viable economy for something that has such a different materiality and temporality?
Yeah, so you're actually also addressing the whole discussion that we're having quite a lot at the moment about what's the worth of art and what's the worth of the artist also.
For sure, for sure. There were, you know, it was a series of works that I developed maybe over the course of 5 or 6 years. So my thinking around this format developed and changed, and this idea of the per hour or per day service for a particular choreographic action, because there ended up being 6 works in the series, it amplified over the course of the years and it shifted.
Were you hired by the hour? Did the museum approach and say, we want the 5 hours of choreographic service?
Yeah. I mean, at first it was like, we want you to do a performance. And then I was putting forward the conditions. And then as the work continued and gained traction and gained visibility, people were understanding the format and the politic of the work before they came to me. So that I had to do kind of less introduction to it, and more I was, you know, fielding kind of requests that were on the same page, let's say.
And when you do something in a theater, then you have lighting and sets and costumes and all of that. So how does that translate for you in a museum context? Because you didn't have all the equipment.
Yeah, and that was for sure part of the beginning of it. The first service, some cleaning, is one person choreographically cleaning the space per hour or per day. And I particularly made that what I called like a suitcase work, in the sense that I could just turn up. It didn't need any of these principles of staging, light, sound, amplification. But at the same time, I was making stage work. So I was really interested in what were the demands of the different contexts between theater and the exhibition space, their economies, their social contracts, that would determine the aesthetic nature of the different pieces that I was making.
Yeah. And Adam, if you're the foreigner, let's bring in the local here. Charlotte, how do you see works, like, for instance, Adam's choreographic services or other choreographed worked in a world that is mainly curated with objects, sculptures, paintings, that like, and then suddenly there is a human being?
The first work I saw by you, I think it was in Fries, also for the Silver Knappe booth, I think. Is that the right way to...
Silver Cooper.
Yeah. It was service number 2, I think.
It was.
Some proximity. And I think what was so interesting for me about seeing that was actually that it was site reflective, if that's a concept. Maybe I should explain that. It was kind of bouncing up against the walls, but it was also kind of bouncing within the text realm, the sort of criticality realm of the show. So it was like reflecting all the conditions that are in set into motions when you enter an art space. And so very much like many of the other artists at that point, like Philip Pareno and people experimenting with the exhibition format, this choreography was also kind of reflecting about what is an exhibition, what kind of frameworks are there, what kind of language do we have, what kind of space do we have, and was kind of setting all these dimensions into motion somehow. And I think the other thing that's for me is interesting when you merge those two formats, the choreographic and the exhibition, well, there are many super interesting levels. One is that you bring the whole space into play as something that can change with positions. So also the other artworks, they can become sort of characters in a theater play, that when you stand over here, that is like saying this, and that element there is like relating to that in that way. So all the relations and all the reflections become active somehow.
So the museum in a way becomes the set of the choreography.
Yeah,
of
and it also becomes a co-player, and it kind of becomes a space where everything is a narrative, is a script, and also has this kind of timeline that is set into motion. And the other thing is, in a lot of art exhibitions, there's also this kind of element between the double, the living, and the reflection between the art and the viewer. And in dance, it becomes very specific because it's one living body and the viewer is another living body. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's not really a living body because it's also an artwork. So you have this kind of strange proximity, and that's how I understood your proximity, because you're almost in the same space, but at the same time, you're not in the same space because it's an artwork taking shape and it's kind of an image, but it's also alive. So this duality between living and human body and kind of death or image is like fluctuating back and forth, as is the reflections of the space and the site as a choreographic room you're entering. So it's a way of setting things into motion that is kind of interesting in an exhibition context for me.
Now, I did not see any of the works, but I'm wondering, when you experience something like that, then also as a viewer, an audience member, so to speak, you can also walk around and change your position, and then you're experiencing the artwork form both from different angles, but also with a different background. Maybe, as you said, there could be other things in the museum that kind of relate to the work or not, or clash or never, but you can, as a viewer, you can choose what you want to see. Did that form anywhere how you did things, or did you work in a dance studio, as one would typically do, and then put it in the museum, or were you in the museum when you were working with it?
You mean with that series of works particularly? I think both. I think it developed as I went along. There was also this kind of notion that the more we were hired, the more a particular service was hired. And for example, some cleaning the first one, some proximity the second one, also number five, Dare to Keep Kids Off Naturalism. They were hired a lot. We did them a lot. And there was this notion that the more we were hired, the better we got at our job, because that was also our time to develop and practice. I think we, and I say we because there was a very particular group of dancers that were doing these works, we got very experienced with how to navigate different environments, how to be in a super huge museum space in the middle of Italy, where three people come in on a given day, and how to keep kind of commitment and concentration and fulfill the service regardless, versus being in the middle of Frieze London with, you know, what felt like 1,000 people a minute. So I think over the course of being hired to do the services, we also got more nimble at how we responded to the environment, like what Charlotte was saying, how we played the space, basically.
And maybe also there's this time notion maybe that that comes into play in those two different environments, because when you enter an art context, then it kind of is a is another sense of time, or it's a it's like more meditative, or it's more private, and it's more you're kind of in your head somehow, and you're kind of experiencing it maybe on a more, I don't know, virtual level or imaginative level. And when you're seeing a performance in a theater setting, then it's more like it has a beginning and an end, and then it's over, and it's kind of, it has its own pace. So this kind of the place with time that it gets, that the exhibition benefits from the choreographic position, is also really interesting, because it's kind of mimicking this. It's like something manifesting that is immaterial, that is like a private time or a, some kind of sensual bodily time unfolding.
Yeah, and also again, you can choose how much you want to see in a theater. It's a very statement if you're leaving. And here you can more, because typically in a museum you can walk by artworks, and sometimes you may be go back because you want to see something again. So there's a different.
And also the what Adam's talking about, when the performer is there alone and still performs. So when you're an audience and you come in and you see someone's cleaning, and then you kind of see it a little bit, and you feel like you're very close to someone who's doing something strange, and then you kind of leave again, and then you still have the notion in your head that act is still happening in there, and it kind of follows you around. That's also kind of special way of using dance.
Yeah, I think that was one of the very strong features, was that the audience would often walk into this space, and the performance was not being delivered to them. It was not, there was no contract that there was going to be a certain kind of affect and experience that they knew they were going to get. So there was, in the first encounter, there was what was at heart in these services was the fact that in the first encounter there was like a kind of awkward but very productive establishment of a certain kind of performance environment and a certain kind of realization that this is what was happening.
Awkward for whom? For the dancers or for the audience?
For both. For both, because I think there's no two ways about it. When you enter a theater, you know you're going to see something. You know you're going to encounter, you know you're going to encounter, let's say, live action. You know you're going to encounter the space at play by live players, you know. But that was not on the table, you know, with these services, that was not on the table. So the first encounter was the kind of the realization between both parties of like, oh, what is this space? What are we doing here? And I think that is very interesting.
I think also the audience often feel like they're entering the stage. So when they enter the space where performance is taking place, they're kind of, whoops, now I'm also kind of being exhibited or being presented somehow. They become complicit. And that's where maybe their awkwardness also comes in. They become shy somehow.
Yeah, yeah. In a way, it's like if I think of some moments when I was doing some cleaning, it really varied, and it became very apparent the diversity of kind of reaction amongst an audience. You know, some people, I mean, we had everything. We had people that were so inquisitive about what it was. They wanted to disrupt the performance, to stop and ask us questions. We had people that found it frustrating that they couldn't be part of it, so they joined it. We had people that, you know, maybe didn't expect live performance, expected objects, and so they got angry and tried to kind of even aggressively disrupt the performance.
Oh, really?
We had, you know, every kind of reaction I encountered doing those works.
Did you want, because now we're in rehearsal together, we always like, I'm kind of like rehearse things. Like if this goes wrong, we go do like this.
Yeah.
So you had some, if this would happen, so you maybe been doing this, you know, for a couple of times and you have some different reactions. Did you then rehearse like, okay, if this is happening, what do we do? And how did you solve these things?
Yeah, it became part of the work. It became part of our way of approaching the work. Mm. I think, you know, I was pretty young. I hadn't done much choreographic work before, let alone works in these spaces. So every kind of encounter was being integrated as a learning, I would say. And then we would discuss it and we would be like, okay, how do we want to approach this? And yeah, I would set, based on those learnings, I would set some kind of guidelines for myself and for the performer, for the other performers that were doing these works. But I think we often, because the choreographic services, of course, in their nature, their service is expressive, but because I was positing them as a service and not a performance, we would often take our cues from other services. Like, you know, if you call a telephone hotline and you're aggressive about, you know, something with your internet not working, there's a very particular protocol with which that person on the other end of the phone addresses your aggressive demands. So we would kind of think about how other services would address, you know, quote unquote customers, and we would apply that.
Yeah, so that's quite a different take on to think about choreography. And also, Patricia, like when you said, when there's like ways you do things in the dance studio, and then this sounds quite different.
Yeah, we were, I mean, this was to do with how, you know, an audience might interact in the middle of a service and how we would field their interactions. It wasn't necessarily what the inner workings of the choreography was itself. But yeah, we felt that we were sometimes fielding the audience much like how the museum guards do or how the ticket salesperson does. You know, we were a bit more, we felt more on that side sometimes than on this kind of like rarefied realm of the artist, you know?
Charlotte, you have researched quite a lot on choreograph, curating, experimental curating. Can you come with some other examples of how the space or what the space turns into or the choreography can turn into when you put that in an art context?
Well, these are some of the perhaps more still very interesting, but also a little bit hardcore aspects. If you're almost like having to be prepared for the meeting the audience. There are some examples of especially like an artist like Maria Hassabi, who's done a lot of work on staircases where the audience just almost like walks on the dancers as they're performing. But I think the interesting thing is when you have this live presence is also that people become sort of in awe also. I mean, that's what I experience with a lot of the guests when they experience dance in a museum. They also feel it's like a luxury and it's like a heightened moment of this whole kind of presence, the fascination with presence. And sometimes when the whole kind of setup comes into play as one and everything really is there, then it is like another level of making exhibitions that is really beautiful, and especially also this conceptual element. So I'm also thinking about it as another way of exhibitions not being about text and not being about sort of a rhetoric question or a school book of then this happened and then this happened and then this happened, but instead exhibition as kind of feelings and emotionalities. So then dance becomes another kind of language. And I'm also interested in this whole kind of idea that Liu Cha has talked a lot about the figural. So instead of having, and also sensibilities, so when you begin to talk about things that are, not talk about, but work with things that are not discursive and textual and language-based, but instead of, about how you can experience something through movement, through time spans, through sensibilities, and all the kind of aesthetic parameters, and I think dance in the museum kind of activates that immediately. It's just as like music also kind of triggers all kinds of psychological levels. Mm-hmm. So in what I'm interested in is something that an artist that I work with, George Henry Longley, based in London as well, he speaks of this 4D dimension, 4D exhibition. And then the fourth dimension is the emotional level of the exhibition space. And I think maybe that's a kind of a romantic idea of the dance, but it's kind of this kind of psychological tension is what the dance also can sort of bring into the art context.
It also sounds a little bit about what Adam, what you just described, when those experiences happening, like we have as an audience, we have codes for going to the theater, codes for going to the museum. So it sounds like there's a little bit of a clash. Maybe that can then result in a different type of reaction. Like as an audience, I don't know what this is or how am I to react to it. And then, yeah.
But also I think the biggest challenge for a museum and for all exhibitions is that they often become like mausoleums. They become dead and boring and they're kind of in off mode. So the biggest plus for a show is actually when it becomes in on mode and when it comes alive and when there's some kind of action going on. And if that's a feeling of awkwardness or if that's a feeling of the audience can feel their own bodies or they're triggered into some kind of emotional state or they relate to another body in a certain way, that's a really interesting, then something happens, because we all know this feeling that you can walk through an exhibition and feel absolutely nothing because you've seen that kind of show before and you know that those paintings, you already seen them in a book and in school. And so for curators and for museums, it's also really interesting, what do we do to show that artist one more time or to tell this or present this thing one more time? And I think the reason why so many museums are interested in introducing dance is also it makes the whole museum institution come alive somehow.
Hmm. Yeah, so it's like the experience becomes very different and then it makes you feel, coming back to what we asked at the beginning, like what do you experience when you have choreography? Then you bring that into a museum context. And Adam, is there something from your experience there that you can apply now that when you're doing stage work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even if I was working very particularly with the two different contexts, I think that some of my interests around the body, around contemporaneity, around what creates, as Charlotte said, attention, which is something that I think about a lot. I think it crosses all my work, regardless of where the context is. If I think of this work in particular, or where I'm at right now with how I'm working on the stage, I guess that this kind of spectrum of virtuosity from, let's say, on the one hand, very technical, athletic material versus something that is as articulate but is perhaps more performative, more minimal, more about figures and images, I think that there's an experience that I gained through the services of my work in the exhibition space to be able to kind of calibrate that full spectrum.
Right.
Will you talk a little bit about the title? Like explain Triptekne, that is your choice of the title for the work that you're doing for Danish Dance Theatre.
I think the title kind of encapsulates some things that I've been interested in my work, which is the meeting point between the animalism, the primal nature of our physicality, and the kind of almost augmented kind of artificial nature of how the digital realm is affecting our physicality. And I think what I wanted to do with Drip Techné was think about how these qualities appear within a kind of evolution of our biology and lead to how we might think about dance technique today.
So it goes into different times of body language and see how that how we have evolved as a species.
Yes, in a way, I think the dramaturgy of the work is quite, and I might be wrong. People might think otherwise after seeing, but I think the dramaturgy of the work is quite a clear line. It's thinking about. There are these kind of stages or figures of evolution from this kind of almost like kind of crude matter into something more amoeba-like, into something more quadrupedal on all fours, into that becoming more human but still on the ground, into the first kind of image of verticality, into the group working together to almost create a kind of mechanistic vehicle. So there's a kind of almost like an evolutionary narrative in the work that is let's say moving through these stages of development, but through very different qualities of movement.
When we are in the studio, because you draw a lot of your inspiration from different types of dance, and you still you draw from the pop culture, you draw from hip hop, you draw from your ballet background, your jazz, all these things. How do you work with the dancer in that way to kind of like, we have these gliding sessions and stuff like that. Why do you do that actually? Why do you want to have all these different aspects in your work?
It's not always kind of premeditated. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a kind of innate interest of mine that... that the field of dance is kind of polylinguistic, I would say. That I think it's also really related to, the experience of the times that I've grown up in. I would probably generationally be like one of the first millennials, I guess that's what generation I belong to, although I'm not totally sure. And it also relates to my experience in the sense that, like, I was, 13 and waking up and watching MTV and absorbing all of these images, and then half an hour later going to do like hardcore ballet classes, which were kind of upholding 18th century principles. So, it's related to the kind of experience I've had. I think, just to go back to your question, I think that sometimes it can be challenging for contemporary dancers who maybe haven't had so much experience with a relation to the floor that I'm interested in, or a relation to a very kind of particular attack in terms of rhythm, and that's not just physically, but like mentally in Drip Techné, they have to change, or they have to kind of transform, maybe not change, but slowly transform their approach, how they're approaching these different kind of stages in the work. So some things are are much more behavioral, much more performative, expressive. Other things are very technical. Other things are much more about being totally aware of what the group is doing together. So it's challenging, mm-hmm. I think.
Do you make any new discoveries when you're in your studio about behavioral patterns or about the different qualities and how they go together, what that does to you when you see them working?
Yeah, I do. I think that, you know, that's a big question for me is how do I create the conditions to be my most imaginative? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can happen in the studio, sometimes it happens on my bike, sometimes it happens eating pizza, sometimes it happens in an exhibition, sometimes it happens, you know, I don't know, sitting in the sauna, you know. And I think the elusiveness of the conditions for imagination are what makes imagination so special and so frustrating. Because, you know, I've spent multiple hours in the studio with these dancers, and there have been moments of revelation, but it's not by default that just applying myself in the studio with great dancers becomes an imaginative zone. And that is something as an artist that I'm always contending with, I would say.
You also have very special aesthetics. What is it that also for music, it's very, you know, it's almost like this gritty. Is it always something that you gravitate towards? Like, it's always like, I would say like, you know, something like your work is very metallic and it's like very, you know.
Oh. Yeah.
Is that MTV coming in?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the work changes and is pretty diverse across all the works that I've made. But yeah, there are definitely like reoccurring aesthetics. I think that, I always want my work to be an expression of the times and to kind of relate to, let's say, the aesthetic current and the materials that we have at our disposal now. But yeah, I'm interested, maybe the grittiness or the drive or the kind of oomph in my work is because, and I don't think this will always be the case and hasn't always been the case, but right now I'm quite interested in working with dance to push a kind of future of how we can be with our bodies, to push to kind of push the possibility of how we can use our bodies, how we can arrange our bodies, and so I'm more looking right now for something that pushes beyond rather than just kind of signals the present, and I don't think that my view of dance in that way, that it's interested in kind of technology and reflexivity, and is a bit more coming from a sociological position. I don't think my view on dance is very romantic.
No.
Not at all.
No. I would not say that either. For this work, Triptekne, you are working with a composer you have never worked with
mm-hmm.
before,
mm-hmm.
Erwan, mm-hmm. and he has never worked with dance before. Mm-hmm. How is your process with him in guiding him and him guiding you, you know, to find a common ground for this work?
You know, I feel like I work with a lot of different collaborators in all the areas of my work. And it's always a kind of scary, exciting possibility to invite someone new in. not because I'm not sure of what they can do, but I'm not, I can never fully anticipate how we will work together, how our personalities will gel to be able to move something forward. Mm. And with Erwan, it's been really productive. I have to say, it's been such a pleasure. He hasn't worked with dance. He's maybe not versed in the way we work or some of the details of how things need to be set up or constructed. But he's so open and focused and committed that the effort or the energy that it takes to bring him into that thinking is a pleasure. He's got an amazing sensibility aesthetically in sound, and I felt that his aesthetic in sound really binds together the sensual and almost enigmatic with the kind of technical or industrial.
What feeling do you want the audience to leave with when they see the piece?
Yeah, I think I'm interested in an audience confronting something that they don't necessarily know, or that is not necessarily familiar, or that they see pushes a kind of a new or a challenging relationship to embodiment. I'm less interested in dance being a kind of a mirror to the audience. So in this way, you know, and it can be very diverse, different kinds of bodies, but I'm really interested in an audience encountering a body attempting to go beyond what it can ordinarily do.
Right. Charlotte, what do you hope to see and be inspired by?
I hope to see sort of an experimentation with the notion of choreography and dance in itself, because I'm really interested in those choreographers who manage to bridge all these different approaches to art. So suddenly it becomes more sculptural. You've also worked with sculptures and visual art. So this kind of idea that what we understand as dance or choreography can be expanded and can be something else. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
We need to wrap up, but just very quickly, Charlotte, I wanted to, what do you think is the future of the curated exhibition or of the experimental exhibition?
I think it's going to be much more a fluid form. The walls are going to disappear, and the time span of the exhibition is going to change drastically. So it's not going to be with a beginning and a end date, but it's going to be transformative throughout. And I think the notion of this whole process of fraying this idea that there are limits between the art forms, I think that's going to be completely dissolved. Everything is going to float into each other.
Yeah.
Thank you, Adam and Charlotte, for this. Adam, you need to go back to the studio to
work
on the
start work.
Drip Techné.
Yes.
Which is opening on October 19th.
Skuespilhuset in Copenhagen. Thank you. Det var dejligt at snakke med de to, Charlotte og Adam. Ja. Det var en fed samtale.
Det var en rigtig fin kontekst, for jeg ved ikke så meget om museumsverden og hvad der sker.
Det gør jeg ikke. Det gør jeg heller ikke.
Så det var dejligt at høre fra Charlotte også, hvordan hun ser på Adams værk.
Ja, og hun kender hans værker. Han har jo set rigtig mange af hans værker. Det er jo helt fantastisk. Altså, det var jo meget inspirerende, når hun snakkede om, at kroppen i museumsrummet, hvad det kan, fordi også det der, hun sagde med, at museum ofte bliver et mausoleum.
Ja.
Altså et dødt sted, hvor man der hænger noget på væggen, og der står noget på, at vi får den levende krop ind.
Det er jo netop, og den her, kroppen kan.
Ja, det kan den nemlig. Den kan skabe den her spænding mellem publikum, og altså, og kan bringe nogle følelser frem, åbenbart, fordi Adam og hans, åbenbart siger så, altså han har jo næsten startet sin karriere med at lave sådan nogle museumsværker.
Ja, og det, men han nævnte jo så det der med, at folk netop blev sure, og det blev jeg ret overrasket over, men som du siger, det bringer sådan nogle følelser frem.
Ja, men det var nogle voldsomme, voldsomme følelser, der åbenbart kunne få folk helt op i det røde felt.
Altså, det er jo interessant, at der er ligesom nogle kropslige værker, der kan skabe det i en anden kontekst også.
Ja. Super fedt. Altså, jeg er jo med Adam i studiet lige i øjeblikket, hvor vi arbejder på hans forestilling, som hedder Driptekne. Og vi er så tæt på premiere. Vi har premiere 19. oktober i Skuespilhuset i København og spiller frem til 21. Ja. Den 24. oktober tager vi så lige et smut til Aarhus og spiller på Musikhuset der. Så kom og se. Vi vil rigtig gerne have publikum, og det bliver en fed forestilling.
Ja, fantastisk. Vi skal være, at den amøbe bevæger sig, ja. Og de forskellige stadier i den menneskeklop.
Ja.
Og hvis man bliver nysgerrig på Charlottes arbejde, så er hun kurator på Kyst Museum for Kunst i det offentlige rum. Så der kan man også hele tiden se, hvad er de her lidt mere eksperimenterende kurateringsformer og typer udstillinger, som de arbejder med der.
Ja.
Så tjek det ud, og lyt til Sans for Dans. Vi lyttes ved.
Hej.
Denne podcast er produceret af Dansk Danseteater. Idé og tilrettelæggelse, Marina Mascarell, Julie Schlüter, Natalie Slot-Richter, Patricia Serun Paulik og Anne-Sophia Gertz. Musik og mastering er af Mikkel Larsen. Søren Meisner har lavet grafikken. Bag mikrofonen, der har vi Patricia Serun Paulik og mig, Anne-Sophia Gertz. Det er også mig, der har optaget og klippet. Og vi skal sige tusind tak til Det Kongelige Teater, hvor vi låner lydstudiet. Hvis du kunne lide den her podcast, så spred gerne ordet. Giv os nogle likes, del det med dine venner. Kom med nogle idéer, så vi kan komme bredere ud.